Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, sitting across from me.
Is Mike Cosentino, and next to me is
Gary LeMaster,
One of our producers.
Hail, the gang's all here.
Yeah, the gang's all here. And we're hoping that the other part of the gang, Richard Falk, is going to call in, and we'll be able to interview him.
Yeah, it's cool. Who tells about this guy? This guy's got some
Richard Falk is, I guess, he's in his 80s. He's 84, 85 years old. He was a long-time professor emeritus of international law at Princeton University. He's a visiting distinguished professor in global and international studies at the UC Santa Barbara, which is my old undergraduate alma mater. And he was for 6 years the United Nations Human Rights Council Special Rapporteur on Palestine occupied territories. It's technically the rapporteur on the situation in the occupied Palestine territories. He's a longtime critic of American foreign policy. He speaks from the left, and he's a longtime critic of Israel, and particularly, he's not criticizing Israel's wonderful
right to exist,
or their symphonies, their high-tech industries, their work in the desert, their building this vibrant and very successful society. He's criticizing the shadow side of the Israeli project, which is their treatment of the Palestinians who were living in the area.
Their behavior, the Israeli behavior in the West Bank, the Israeli behavior in the Gaza Strip.
That's the key to his critique of Israel. It's about their treatment of the Palestinians. And, of course, his job as a special reporter about the situation in the occupied territories is to report on human rights violations in the territories. And, that's basically his job and his point of view for the last 6 years. He's written a book called The Palestine Legitimacy of Hope. Just out this last October on, it's based on a whole series of essays of his personal blog while he was the reporter really on the situation in the occupied territories. He's extremely controversial in the sense that the internet is filled with people who hate him. And so if you go on the internet, you'll see all these attacks on him. And of course, in 40 years of doing politics, starting with opposition to the Vietnam War and colonialism and so forth and so on, he said a lot of really true things, and he's also made some mistakes in what he's said and done.
This is one of those things, or one of those situations, where the internet is particularly poisonous, actually.
Particularly vicious.
Yeah,
because the attacks on
they've refunds. In 2014, when you take a controversial position like we're going to talk about this morning, that is anti-Tel Aviv and anti-Washington, and anti Sedona for those of the people that are sympathetic to this side and don't maybe.
I think what really is remarkable about it is that he doesn't really take a strong position for one or the other side. He simply is trying to see both sides of the situation.
But he sees the Palestinians as the wronged party in this project. In other words, he sees the Palestinians as being oppressed and being mistreated, and he I would say this, you know, if you go on the internet, you'll see all the groups that hate him. The UN Watch is a pro-Israel but very extreme group. And you'll see all the guys who hate him. And I just suggest that you actually read his very modest and straightforward. He's occasionally, his rhetoric has gotten maybe ahead of the facts. But for the most part, he's a reasonable and very thoughtful man. And part of his work is about, the most controversial stuff is his criticism of Israel. He's also an advocate of international law. And we live in a period when the nation states are the beginning and end of everything, and where everything is analyzed in terms of nation states. And he's one of those people who has advocated for the UN, for international law, for international tribunals, for understanding the world in a different way. And he's edited some books where people have thought, is there a different way that we can do these than these nation states? Because part of the problem is nation states protect you. So if you're the Palestinians living in what's now mostly Israel, if you don't have a strong sense of identity, if you don't have a military tradition, if you don't have a state to protect you, then what happens to you is what happens to the Palestinians. You get dispersed all over the Middle East. You end up on the bottom of everything. But he's looked at ways that we can move beyond nation states and the way nation states work in order to get to a situation which is better. And I think there are very few people who are willing to look at what a world would look like organized in a different way. We all accept nation states as the you know, and there's different theories. There are people who are realists and there are people who are idealists, but everybody works from the basis of these nation states.
Well, we all accept I believe the Middle East, you know, the whole tribal, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq doesn't necessarily believe, at least a lot of people over there, that gain a lot of power from non-nation states like ISIS, ISIL. These are the organizations that make hay on the non-nation states. So let me get this straight to make sure we're clear. We got this. Our guest this morning.
Not called in.
Richard Falk.
Yeah.
It takes a really controversial position because he argues against the two-state. You know, here's Palestine, here's Israel. We'll have peace as soon as we can do that. And nobody's been able to do that. No American president has been able to broker that. No Middle Eastern leader has been able to do that. And he's arguing against the whole concept of the nation state, which is what we understand as a country. I mean, nationalism is, patriotism, all those things kind of go away when you don't have a nation state.
Well, he's willing to consider alternatives to nation states. And he's willing to examine different ways of doing things. His opposition to the Oslo Accords are the basis for all the Middle East negotiations, and they were started several decades ago. According to Falk, they've been mostly a screen. Now, the Oslo Accord means that the United States is the intermediary in the discussions and the negotiations between the Palestinians and the Israelis, and excludes almost everybody else. In other words, the U.S. takes the leading role in these discussions, and everybody else takes a side portion. The process has been going on for decades, and for someone like Falk, what it's allowed is the Israelis to expand their settlements more and more. So there's, 650,000, 700,000 settlers on the pre-1967 borders that define Israel. And so
I think settlers gives it a kind of a wrong connotation too. These are suburbs. These are large subdivisions that have been built on the former, you know, Palestinian lands of the West Bank. They just took another 1,000 acres to build, I don't know how many more homes. So these aren't like outposts. These are large,
massive
subdivisions, suburbs of Jerusalem.
And completely separate from the Palestinian villages around it with their separate roads. They have a giant wall that separates. It's almost entirely, I think 80% of it is on Palestinian territory. This separates what was going to be Palestine from Israel.
You can find maps on the internet that show the so-called settlements on the West Bank, and you're seeing the land absolutely peppered and becoming covered with so-called settlements.
With Israeli settlement. And so many people have been settled on the West Bank that people have traditionally supported. Remember, the traditional solution to the Middle East problem between Israel and the Palestinians is the Israelis will take part of the land as their state, the Palestinians will take part of the land as their state, and the two of them will at least have a cold peace, peaceful coexistence.
And the original plan called for Jerusalem to be an international city that was shared by all, you know, sides. Now Israel has declared it as its capital.
Right. And they're engaging in their old process of population removal. They're removing the Palestinians, the Arabs from the old quarter.
In
Jerusalem traditionally is divided up into a Jewish quarter, an Islamic quarter, an Armenian quarter, and so forth and so on.
At this point in the conversation, the Israeli supporters get pretty shrill. As long as they're denying Israel's right to exist, that's all they have to say. Washington would say, and Tel Aviv would say. If they would say, you know what, Israel's all right, they can stick around, then the negotiations could move forward.
But what's happened is, it seems to me, is the Palestinians have been more and more amenable to some sort of nonviolent solution. The Israelis have been more extreme in their demands. And the Israelis, we were talking to Juan Cole, I met young Israeli soldiers decades and decades ago, and they seemed to be looking at the situation with both eyes, with some perspective. They were fighting the Arabs, but they understood what they were doing to them at the same time. I don't see that anymore in Israel. It seems to be entirely sort of like the Cyclops. They see things from just one point of view, their point of view. And
some of the
members of the current coalition are pretty close. I mean, if they weren't Israeli, we'd say they were fascist. Some of the groups belonging to the coalition, to Netanyahu's coalition, are really, really extreme, and they're dominist. They want to dominate and eliminate any chance of any Palestinian.
I saw an interview yesterday with the president of Israel, who is, I believe that was his title anyway. He's to the right of Netanyahu. And
not much room there.
No. He declares Jerusalem as the capital of Israel with no hope of concession. And his basic stance was that we can only exist through power. We have to be stronger than, you know, the Arabs have all this other land. They have millions of acres of land, and in Israel you can drive across the length or the width of Israel in 15 minutes. And so they have so much, the Arabs have so much land and we have so little, that our only hope is power and strength, military power.
And he wants to drive out, basically he wants to make the situation for Palestinians where they have almost no rights. and no abilities to do anything to govern themselves, and he wants to drive them out. In other words, if you don't like it, we run things. If you don't like it, move somewhere else. I mean, that's the message. Now,
Falk's position, as I understand it, is that the U.S. is irrelevant in this battle between the Palestinians and Israel. Almost irrelevant. The only people that can decide this are the people. In other words, the governments aren't going to ever get their act together enough to be able to design.
Falk has given up on the two-state solution and the Oslo process that we were talking about earlier, where the United States moderates it.
That's
now,
important.
The problem with the United States moderation, and diplomacy can be extremely cynical. So Dennis Ross, who was our negotiator, Obama's negotiator, first negotiator over there, has gone to work for one of the more extreme Jewish Israeli lobbying groups. In other words, here's the guy who's supposed to be the intermediary, and he's gone to work for one side, extreme group in one side.
He took his lessons from Washington, I mean.
Well, the point, I think, you know, a cynic in international affairs, a realist would say, you send a guy who's so pro whoever has the power, right? Whoever has the power that he can convince them to cut some kind of deal. It didn't work. It was hard to understand what the Obama administration was up to, because there's many people in Israel who would like to have peace. But clearly the Netanyahu government and the dominant political forces have no intention of making peace with the Palestinians on any basis that they could accept. And so that you have that situation. And that's a really difficult situation to deal with. They simply do not. Netanyahu has used all this discussion, all the negotiation, just to expand the settlements and make a two-state solution sort of impossible.
Sure.
So some Palestinians think it's impossible. Some people still hold on to it. The U.S. and the world policy is to have two states. Let's split the difference. We'll give Israel not the original division in 1947, when I think they got 45% of when the Arabs got 45% of the land, but we'll go back to 67 when they ended up with 22% of the land or
after the
Six-Day
War.
Yeah, after the Six-Day War. So the international community has moved in that direction.
Right. They moved in Israel's direction.
Direction because Israel has the power.
Right.
It has 300 nuclear weapons plus. It has the largest, strongest army in the Middle East. It has a vibrant economy. They've done great in everything, from having a good symphony to business, to high tech, to thriving in the desert. They brought a tremendous amount of things. So Israel is a beautiful, and significantly well-organized country, and the problem is that they're systematically discriminating against first the Arabs, who are Jewish citizens, and then they occupy millions of people. And
they control everything. You know, I think it's important to understand the kind of the history, but Gaza is essentially a refugee camp.
Yes.
This is where the Palestinians were moved in order to make way for the Jews in Israel.
I forget the statistics, Gary, but most of the people in Gaza are not Gazans. There were people living in Gaza. Gaza one time had a fairly vibrant civilization, back a few hundred years ago, I think it was. But almost all of them are just Palestinian refugees from what's now Israel.
It's still a refugee camp, and Israel controls the borders, and they control the coastline. And so they control absolutely anything and everything that goes in and out of Gaza.
Right. Even fishing rights, even how far you can take your fishing boat out. So a lot of this seems sort of petty. The Palestinians complain the Israelis will no longer let us take our fishing boats out where we can catch larger fish, so all we have are these small fish. And so forth and so on. Israel's attacked Gaza in 2008 and 2009, 2012 and 2014. To give just 1 second, Gary, just the West Bank is run by the Palestinian Authority, a more moderate group,
than Hamas.
Gaza, which was the most miserable place, I don't think it's an accident that Gaza, the most miserable place of all, the most decrepit, mistreated, confined, it's a giant prison camp, really. Those are the people who voted for Hamas, and they voted in an election for Hamas. And the people who are treated a little bit better in the West Bank voted for a much more moderate Palestinian group.
I think one of the really disturbing things is that there are extremists on both sides, as always, with almost every issue.
There are.
The Hamas, rebels or extremists have brought rockets into Gaza and
yes.
launched them into Israel. Israel then can use that as an excuse to go in and slap down Gaza. Even though, it's kind of odd that since Israel controls all the borders of Gaza, it's kind of interesting that they're able to get so many rockets in. But you have extremists on both sides.
And the rockets, one of the things that, when you look at the Middle East, and I'm not talking about morality for a second, I'm just talking about level of leadership. Hezbollah in Lebanon seems rational. It seems well-led in the technical sense.
You got to be careful.
Hamas, it's really hard to understand what the hell they think they're doing. When they're firing off these missiles that don't do anything in retaliation for Israeli attacks and stuff.
We're talking about organizations that literally populate the U.S. terrorist list. This is one of those Vietnam veteran moments when we sit here and discuss Hamas and Hezbollah and the Palestinian Authority and Israel. And we have people out there pulling their hair out saying, you have no idea what you're talking about. I love that we are approaching it, the Howard Zinnian approach. In other words, we're talking about the people on the ground and their suffering in Gaza and in the West Bank and the incredible suffering. We're talking about 6 and 7 and 8 generations of refugee status where you've never been to a decent school. You've never held a job. Your father didn't have a job. Your grandfather didn't have a job. Nobody in the Palestinian history of that region for the last 6 or 7 decades.
Their economy is controlled.
Has had the kind of I don't want to say normal life that we think, and so we. The extreme behavior on both sides. If Richard Falk were here, one of the first things he would talk about is the failure of the Oslo Accords. Why we stick to, and I believe it's, I know why the United States, we stick to the Oslo Accords because at least it's a framework. It's something to work from. Without it, we have nothing. You have Netanyahu on one side and all the Palestinian leaders
but,
on the
but
other.
What I don't understand is this, and I've never, one of the weaknesses of the Obama administration has been in foreign policy. They've never rethought foreign policy at all. They've just tried to make a more competent version of the kind of foreign policy that's gone on before. The first ambassador, peace negotiation.
Harsh. I think that's rather harsh.
The first ambassador that they sent was Dennis Ross, is completely biased for Israel, and of course his work went nowhere. They sent John Kerry.
Falk would agree with that.
Yeah. They sent John Kerry, and John Kerry did everything humanly possible to do the thing, to get some negotiations going, and it failed. And from my point of perspective, is the Netanyahu government is utterly uninterested in any kind
That's
of
right.
deal with the Palestinians.
That's right.
Yes. I'm not saying many Israelis want to have a deal. They want to have peace. But the Netanyahu government, which controls Israel, is not interested in peace at all.
Yes.
So it's hard to understand sending these ambassadors there on, it seems like a fool's mission because, Netanyahu is totally uninterested in anything. All he's doing is playing for time and building more settlements.
I think that's rather harsh to put the blame on the Obama administration. I think the Obama administration has simply been following the Oslo Accords like every other administration.
Did you get a sense from your reading? Go ahead.
And I'd like to make the point that where I started out with this is that the extremism is actually detrimental to both sides. You know, the reaction to this latest round of rocket fire by Israel, actually, when polls were done in Gaza, after the response by Israel, the majority of the people were even, who had been sitting on the fence with Hamas, and were not sure if they really supported them or not, overwhelmingly now support them.
Even on the West Bank, Gary, there's rising support for Hamas because Hamas, to us, it seems like absolute madness. Hamas seems to make the least sense of any of these Islamic, you can call them terrorist group, extremist group. Any of them seems to make the least sense in its tactics. In other words, it's firing mostly harmless missiles, at the Israelis.
They're still firing missiles, but.
Yeah, they're still missiles, but they're firing stuff that doesn't work at all, and yet they do it anyway, and they bring down these massive, Israeli things. We're basically Israel levels everything of value in Gaza.
This is an example of violence on both sides hardening the issue and making it very difficult, if not impossible, to negotiate.
The problem that the Palestinian Authority has is that one of their deals with Israel is that they keep Palestinians in line in terms of demonstrating against Israel and attacking Israel. So they become, their security choices are trained by the United States, which seems like a good thing in one way. And they're also, they're not only trained by the United States, but they're enforcing, a deal with the Israelis. And that's, I think, undercutting their authority and their support for a more moderate position because they seem weak. They seem like they're not standing up to the Israelis. They're not producing, any results. And so then you have this turn to an organization who, sometimes, and Hamas seems just totally mindless. Now, the latest round of events, three young Israeli settlers are killed and murdered. Israel says it was done by Hamas or by people who, they don't say the Hamas leadership did it, but they say that the people connected with it. And according to the press, they're a kind of a dissident group of Hamas members killed these people. And then Israelis then killed a young Palestinian. And the Israel conducted raids all over the West Bank arresting people and breaking into people's houses and rearresting people that they had released in an earlier deal.
And destroying lots and lots of homes.
And it's basically a provocation. So if Hamas had been smart, provocation or not, they wouldn't have fired off their mostly, but not always, useless missiles at Israel. But they did. They took the bait, and then Israel basically flattened Gaza and killed several thousand people.
And the people are caught in the middle. I mean, my point is that this overreaction from both sides, you know, it's neither side has their hands clean. They're both bloody. And so when Hamas fires rockets into Israel, they are not doing the Palestinians any favor because the Israelis, they're hoping they'll win the public relations war. And that's what it's come down to, is Hamas, I think, is looking at this as
some kind of a pissing contest.
Long-term, public relations contest. If we can generate enough of an overreaction, we'll turn the world against Israel.
Right,
and to some degree, that's been working. We have boycotts of investments of businesses who invest in Israel. We, you know, have a 164, or anyway, a large number of countries in the UN adopted a resolution to recognize Palestine
as a state,
and it was blocked by the U.S. on the Security Council.
Sweden recently recognized Palestine as a state. So what Fox says is that the whole Oslo process, and remember, we once had genuine supporters in Israel of Oslo, like Rabin, who was assassinated by a right-wing Israeli, who did believe in the process. But for, gosh, it must be two decades, we've had people who are just using the process to extend domination. And I think what Fox's point is that the game of nation states in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is played out. Not working. It's not going anywhere.
In short, he says there's got to be another way.
There has to be another way. And part of Fox is very, very controversial for his views, first on Vietnam and the protest against Vietnam. Some of his things I really disagree with. But his criticism of Israel, but part of it is his willingness to look for other ways to do things. So Falk is looking at the situation and saying the United States will never be a fair, you know, a fair intermediary. Not only are our ambassadors biased in favor of Israel, but the whole country, you can't survive politically here criticizing Israel. There's a few academics, distinguished academics. We interviewed Noam Chomsky that can criticize Israel in an unfriendly way. You know, and Falk is a fairly fierce criticism. Not of, you know, an Israeli symphony orchestra, but a way the darker side, the shadow side of the Israeli project, which is what's happened to Palestinians. So his thing is that it's not going to come from nation states. And the model he's using is really South Africa. The campaign to boycott and to put pressure on South Africa over apartheid. That's his thing. It has to come from people, because the states, the United States and the European states and Israel and the Palestinian Authority and Hamas have all failed. They're all doing bad.
And that's exactly. And one of the issues I have with today's show is that we have failed, as everybody fails, I think, to give a sense of the violence, of the hopelessness, of the anger, of the horror of living in on the West Bank or in the Gaza Strip for the last 70 years, and the atrocities on both sides, you know, the mounting atrocities, you know, and so many. And I hear people like us that are sitting around trying to find some sense, some path through this forest. So we'll often get mired in those atrocities, and they are considerable. I mean, which side do you pick?
Suppose you're not interested in a side, Mike. Suppose we wish the Israelis the best of everything.
Okay,
we want them to just do wonderfully.
Then where's all
the, and understand. We want the Palestinians to do wonderfully.
Where's the
and
other?
We don't wait, and we wait, and we don't want to take sides. We don't want to. In the United States, everyone is taught to identify with Israel from the time of their little children. They're taught that Israelis are always right, Israelis are the good guys and stuff. You cross a border.
Well, they got a good story.
You cross the border.
5,000 years.
Yeah. You cross the border, and you have everybody who thinks the Palestinians are completely right. I was working with a bunch of Muslim guys who had become American citizens in New York, and they said, "Well, there's nobody to vote for." And I said, "Well, you know, we're working in a luxury hotel," and I said what everybody else said to them. Well, you know, Republicans, you know, the owners vote for Republicans, and there are customers in this luxury hotel vote Republican. The staff, we all vote Democratic. And Masoud said to me, he said, "There's nobody for us to vote for." And I did a long pause, and I think it took me a couple of hours to realize what he meant.
Sure.
He meant that there was nobody who supported the Palestinian cause in New York politics. There was nobody who supported fairness for Muslims and so forth and so on. And I said to him, look, you're right. I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that there's somebody who is going to be, who's advocating fairness to the people that you identify with.
But I
said, but, you know, your guys are citizens now. You have to organize your own. If those are your beliefs, if you want to identify with the Palestinian side, you have to organize. You have to give money to candidates. You have to vote. And, you know, and it's going to be a long haul. That's your side. But what I'm looking for, Mike, is somebody who's not on the Israeli side or the Palestinian side, but on the people, human side.
Yes, 40 minutes into the show, we are talking about Richard Falk's position, and that is the non-nation state. Remember, I started hammering you at the beginning of the show about what's this non-nation state kind of thing? What's this non-state? How can we have a non-state? And what I believe we're getting at here is that the only way to solve the solution is on the individual level, on the people level, is what Falk tried to say. At least that's the headline of his. For those people that want it, December 13th. This is fresh off of Al Jazeera America. Only people can bring peace to Palestine.
He's given
up on government. But so, and if I was on the, if I wanted to say something pro-Israeli, I would say, where's all, okay, fine, no states. Let's not deal with the nation state. Let's deal with people. Where's all of the support for Palestine from all the other Arab states? Where are those Arab states?
Well, what he's saying is that you have to shift from war. And he has a whole, in some of his other articles, the Arabs in Palestine, the Palestinians originally, even before World War II, resisted Zionist settlers. It didn't work. After the partition, which they believed was terribly unfair, there's a much larger Palestinian population than there is an Israeli population, and the Israelis get the lion's share of the best land. They thought that was unfair, and the disorganized, corrupt, and third world countries invaded Israel. That didn't work. There was terrorism in the 60s and several, you remember those guys seizing airplanes, and there were the terrible thing where they shot and threw off a guy in a wheelchair on a cruise ship. That terrorism didn't work. Wars didn't work. The war with Syria and Egypt tried to do stuff. Everything failed. Palestinian armed resistance failed.
Where are you going? Israel's not going away.
What he's saying is, if I read it, is none of the things that have been tried in the past have worked.
Got it.
And we're too biased to bring peace. So it has to come in some other way. And I think he's using the South African model, which is boycotting, which is disinvesting, is that the word? Not investing in the country, which is putting political pressure on, which is recognizing in a Palestinian state.
On an international basis.
Yeah, on an international basis from everybody.
Yeah.
You know,
so we
Europe
stop
should do
in
it. You know, South Africa should do it. Everybody should do it. That's what he thinks has the potential to work. It's a completely...
A version of sanctions.
No. If you ask Richard Falk, you always have a right. If somebody's occupying you, you always have a right to use violence to get rid of them. If somebody was occupying us here in the U.S., people I grew up with in Oklahoma would have no problem with using violence to get rid of them. But what he's advocating is a nonviolent process of pressure, which he thinks has the possibilities of forcing a solution. And he doesn't really say whether it's going to be a two-state solution or a one-state. See, here's the problem, folks. There's millions of Palestinians in the occupied territories who have almost no rights to vote.
I was going to say, we're talking about basic human rights here.
Right.
Okay.
And there's a highly discriminated against Arab population in Israel. They're in a much better position than the people being occupied, but it's systematic discrimination. So what he's saying is that international pressure, arguments, criticism, and so forth can bring change. Now, he doesn't say how exactly this is going to work in terms of two states. Maybe a Palestinian state won't be that important. I don't know what he has in mind. Too bad that there's been some miscommunication and we can't ask him.
Well, I think Richard Falk would say, in exchange for the rule of law in Gaza and the West Bank, in exchange for full human rights, that there would be a political surrender, so to speak, from that side.
Well, if you look at countries, I mean, right now, people are talking about the collapse of Arab Spring. But Arab Spring was not just Arab Spring in Arab countries. It was also the Iranians in 2009, you know, massive movements. It's also Hong Kong, a movement for freedom. All these groups have collapsed under the weight of vast institutions, at least temporarily. In other words, and so I think that's sort of what he has in mind. Demonstrations and protests and stuff. Now, if we're in our particular little section of history, these things have not worked. But if you remember, you know, Mubarak looked like he had every single lever of power, just like the Iranian ayatollahs. The Islamic government seems to have collected in their hands every single lever of power, economic, military. They have their own special thugs and so forth and so on. Things can change when things seem impossible. Of course, there's no Mandela in the Middle East, but who thought that South Africa could change and become a country that didn't practice apartheid?
I think the real point is that you can't break the cycle of violence with more violence. And we continue, if I have a complaint with our foreign policy, is we continue to subsidize the Israeli military, even though their standard of living is comparable to ours. We ship, you know,
billions
of dollars into Israel for more weapons. We ship weapon systems to them. They're already the biggest, baddest bully in the area. And so if we continue to, you know, add our weight behind it, nothing's ever going to change. And Netanyahu's refusal to negotiate with Hamas is, you know, he says he won't negotiate with somebody who won't recognize him. Well, you don't make peace by not negotiating with your enemy. You know, it's not a friend. You can't negotiate with your friends. You have to negotiate with your enemy.
Hamas has offered a 50-year truce with Israel if they'll withdraw to the 67 border.
Yes, please.
I watched Yasser Arafat send out feelers about recognizing Israel, but not quite recognizing Israel. You don't start from recognizing. If you demand that, nothing's going to happen. It has to be a gradual thing. I don't know anything about Hamas.
Well, according to Falk, in 2002, Arab Initiative offered a commitment to full diplomatic and economic relations with Israel from the entire Islamic world, which was proposed by the Arab League and passed 56-0 with only Iran abstaining. More recently, Netanyahu got a little letter from 106 of his military advisors, according to Falk, saying, move forward on a two-state solution. Now, they were unclear as to what the two-state solution would be.
Next week, we're going to have Paul Lins, and Paul Lins is a professor at NAU, and he's going to be talking about the ISIS factor, ISIS, ISIL, IS, this giant new terrorist organization in Syria and Iraq. And its effect on having nation states in the area.
We're going to ask him. You know, for us,
we'll get a chance to talk to him. He has a very different point of view than Richard Falk.
And I think one of the things we want to ask him is this wave seemed to come out of nowhere.
2 weeks, we're going to have our yearly end of the year show where we sum up all the wonderful news of the year. You can listen to this podcast.
VVID.org.
We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.